Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Richard Rossi Live. We have an amazing story, a true Hollywood story. I love true Hollywood stories. My guest today, Alexis Hunter, has written a book that I suggest all of you who are fans of Hollywood, of the great era of Hollywood. This book tells a story that takes place in the late 60s, early 70s of Joy Lansing, one of the sexiest, most beautiful, glamorous actresses that many of us saw growing up on television and in films. And the title of the book is A Body to Die For, and we'll learn today why that title has a dual meaning. Hollywood marketed her as the glamour girl, as this hourglass, kind of living, lovely Barbie doll. But in so doing, with all the silicone injections, it ended very, very badly. It truly was a body to die for. I live here in Hollywood, and it really took me into the scene of the early 70s. And some things have changed on the Sunset Strip here in Hollywood since then. Some of those iconic places are gone, but Alexis just takes us into this world. And there's a few kind of shocking twists and turns to this story that were really quite interesting. So we'll be right back in about a minute with Alexis Hunter to tell the story of Joy Lansing, A Body to Die For. Right back.
Yourself on a journey to find a talk show, not just an ordinary talk show, but a Christian talk show, unlike anything the mind could fathom. Suddenly, your search comes to an end, for up ahead, there's a signpost, your next stop, the Rich Rossi Live Zone.
Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live, and on Amazon, anywhere you get books, you can get this book, Joy Lansing, A Body to Die For. And we're going right now to line one to the lovely Alexis Hunter, who chronicled this incredible story, this in a very intimate and personal way. And we'll find out why in a moment. Welcome, Alexis, to the show. We're so elated you're able to be with us today.
Thank you so much, Richard. I am so honored to be with you. I really appreciate this. Thank you.
Well, you're most welcome, and thank you for sharing your book with me. And I guess all things happen in divine timing, because I'm not the most tech-savvy person, and I had a message from you, I think, over a year ago about this book, sitting there about possibly sharing it on the show, and for some reason it was in another's mailbox or something, and I didn't even see it till a year later, but here we are. And the story, the book really drew me in. Why don't we start now? You grew up in the Midwest. Was it Kansas?
Yes. I lived in a little town, population 10,000, a little town called Ark City, which was Arkansas City, probably about 30 miles from Wichita, near the Oklahoma border.
And we have pictures of Joy on the site here on the show that people are looking at, and she was so glamorous. Now, I got the impression that you, as many of us were, saw her long before coming to Hollywood. You saw her on television and in film, and growing up, she was someone, would it be fair to say, someone you idolized or just had a crush on or just saw as such a beautiful person?
Oh, my God, yes. I remember as a kid, a young teenager, I would rush home every day after school to watch Joy on the Bob Cummings Show, and I think later on it became Love That Bob. I was just a kid and just totally fascinated with her. And that's what's so interesting about how we met, which we can discuss in a little while.
Yeah. Did you have crushes on any other stars? Was it
Joy was the one. There was something so wonderful about her.
Now, you meet her, and of course, all of you listening can read this in much greater detail, and just really your writing, Alexis, takes us into this town and place so well. This time of Hollywood back in those wonderful days, you know, of the 60s and 70s, you actually have the chance to meet her and work on a film together, which was the film Bigfoot, starring John Carradine. I think this came out around maybe 1970 or so.
Yes, yes. We shot it beginning of 1969, and it was released in 1970.
Yeah, and, you know, for those of us that are fascinated with that whole thing, around 1967, the two guys out in the woods, I think it was in the state of Washington, if I remember, shot this footage in 1967. So Bigfoot was a big topic of the day, so a lot of these kind of B-movie guys would jump on that. Did you have an opinion, or do you have an opinion of Bigfoot, if it's real or a hoax or anything like that? Or
I have no idea. All I know is it was real to me because I was one of them in the film. So
you were. You did a great job. Now,
yeah.
You carry joy off in the film, don't you?
Not actually. The main Bigfoot is the one who actually the promo photos. They have her lifted and carrying her away. I untied her and ran away with her.
Yeah, I remember that. Because I was thinking, I wonder if they changed to the other one when he carries her off, because I thought that would be awfully challenging to run through the woods with joy on over the shoulder like that.
There's no way. There's no way.
Be an acrobat or something to balance her like that.
Yeah, I couldn't do it. The guy who played the major Bigfoot was, I think, like 6'4 or 6'5. And I'm not nearly that tall, so. And not strong like that guy.
Well, you are so excited, you capture the excitement that you felt, because here you are, the kid from Kansas, and now you're on the set of a film with your idol. So tell us about that. Your heart must have been pounding when you see Joy Lansing come in.
Oh, my God. I was in makeup. A friend of mine had been working on this film and called me and said, I can't take this one more minute. Do you want the gig? And I said, absolutely. Well, it was my big chance to be a star. So I jumped at the opportunity. And so there I am early, early morning. I think it was like 6 in the morning, putting this. I had this monkey suit on. The film was so low budget that he was Mickey Mouse, okay? I mean, once you see the film, you'll see what I'm talking about. So I'm in this monkey suit, and what they had to do is they had to glue hair on my hands and on my face, and they used, like, spray paint, black spray paint, and put these fangs in my mouth, you know, so that I looked really awful. And I'm sitting there with a slow torture, and in walked the most magnificent human being I've ever seen in my life, and I had no idea Joy was going to be in this film. I probably would have been too nervous to show up. But there she was, walking in and with this amazing aura of sweetness, and she sat down in a chair next to me to have her makeup done, and we started talking, and she was so unbelievably sweet and kind. It just blew me away.
Hmm. Yeah, her sweetness really comes through, and you know, I've known quite a few sex symbols, both male and female, that are well known for being the person of people's sexual desires in film and television, and found that more often than not, it's an image and it's not really the true person. In fact, this was quite damaging to her, the casting couch type of thing, where everyone is looking at her body and the way she looks, and the, you know, the famous actors and the people using her and that sort of a thing. So at this point, as we'll find out, you know, as you guys all read her book, A Body to Die For, Joy is pretty fed up with guys just looking at her as a piece of meat at this point, I think, huh?
Yeah, she was. Unfortunately, that's how she was perceived by just about every manager, every boyfriend, every person she would meet, even doctors, and that was a major problem down the line. They were more interested in getting her autograph or knowing her or saying they knew her or just being close to her and hoping to date her. They didn't really know who she was or what kind of person she was, and it was a real tragedy.
You know, when we were looking at her photos, and my wife and family were here as I was looking at the photos, and they were thinking, wow, this woman, and watching the tapes of her act, she was really on the level of a Marilyn Monroe, that kind of really strong blonde comedian, sex appeal, the whole thing. Was she satisfied with her accomplishments, or did she, because Hollywood's so competitive and makes you feel inferior sometimes with comparisons and the contrast, did she feel like she missed her chance, she could have been bigger like a Marilyn, or was she satisfied and happy with the level she got to?
She actually wanted more. She was very serious about her acting, and she was pigeonholed into the sexable role, which she didn't mind. In fact, she played it up, and about earlier, she wanted to, there was so much competition in Hollywood, and so she unfortunately had those silicone injections, which is one of the reasons why I wrote the book. I want to stop them from continuing to do this terrible stuff.
It is terrible.
The injections. It's awful. It's so awful, Richard.
In fact, we have a family member who got breast cancer from this.
Oh, yeah. And Joy had breast cancer and ovarian cancer. It spread it spread throughout her body.
So I hope you women listening out there, please don't do this. I mean, so many times they're thinking this is the thing that will get the men, or the men will pay more attention to them. And sometimes they have some jerk they're dating that wants them to do it. But just speaking as a man, I can tell you that I was working on a show as an actor, and I was playing a cop, and my partner was this African-American cop, and we had a beach scene, and a bunch of the actresses jogged on the beach with the fake silicone breast, and the consensus of, you know, about 10 guys in their locker room talk was, you know, why don't women, you know, be more natural and quit all that? They were turned off by the plastic and the fakeness, and so women, please don't kill yourself over, you know, something that you think is the thing, you know. And it's Sally Kirkland, who's been on the show, the Oscar-nominated actress, has crusaded for this too, who's also been damaged by this. So the silicone and the breast jobs contributed directly to her death, didn't it? I know we're jumping ahead a little bit, but it really killed her. And only, what, 42, something like that?
She was 43 when she died.
I look at it as Hollywood really murdering her, because
I agree.
They were so obsessed with her looking a certain way, and she had to keep getting these injections. And then I don't know how much of the book, I don't know if I'm giving away too much, but because you got to read
the whole book.
You got roped into doing this yourself then to your own detriment and your own harm. Of course, you survived. Yeah.
Yes, I did. We were in New York, and we went. She had most of her injections in L.A., but she had also had some, I believe, in New York. And when we were in New York, she was appearing in with Mickey Hargitay, and this was burlesque on Long Island. And while we were in New York, she took me to see a doctor, Dr. Risch, who examined her breast. She was having problems with one of her breasts from the silicone. It had become hard and misshapen. So he decided he would just inject her with cortisone to hopefully soften the tissue, which was probably the worst thing he could have done. That's like throwing gasoline on the fire, you know, if when there's malignancy. And at this point, we didn't know. And Joy was still very pro-silicone. She thought it was the greatest. It helped her career. The doctor started saying to me, well, why don't you have, you know, why don't you have, you know, some silicone? It'll enhance your breasts. And I wasn't small, but I certainly wasn't large. I was probably a 34C, maybe a little in between. And I agreed to having one injection, and it was horrendous. It was absolutely horrendous. They use the biggest needle you've ever seen in your life, and put it on your chest wall up into the top of your breast, and I could feel it just ripping my tissue. And at that point, I decided I'm never going to do this stuff again. But later on, after Joy died, Joy died in 72. By 78, I had to have a bilateral mastectomy because I had premalignant lesions in my breast.
So sorry you had to go through all that, Alexis. I'm glad you're here and you've survived it, and you're helping others by sharing this cautionary tale and warning other women. What would you say to a woman that? Let me tell you, I have an actress friend who is at that kind of age that women will hit when they're worried about their biological clock and getting too old to have kids, and they're single, and she's in that panic that some women hit. Am I going to find a husband and be able to be a mother and that sort of thing? I only got a couple years left of childbearing years, and she is in a crowd that's always doing the plastic surgery and that. And she said to me, "Oh, I'm going to run off and get a breast job. Maybe that'll help me find, attract a man and that sort of thing." I said, "Please, please, please, please don't." What would you say to a woman in that position that's thinking this is going to be a good thing for her to run off and get this done?
Well, I feel that if it's to please them, not to try and accomplish, if you're trying to hook someone or find a mate or whatever, you have to want it yourself, not to want to please someone else. And as far as the implants, quite a few people have had problems with implants. My main focus is the worst thing are the injections, because they never go away. They go, they migrate. You can start in your breast, and you can have a lump of silicone in your leg. It's hideous. And now, one thing that the audience needs to know, this fascination now with having a big bottom.
Oh, yeah.
See, all these,
the whole
that's
Kardashian,
silicone.
The Kardashian,
yeah, that's,
butt,
that,
yeah.
Yeah, that's silicone. They're
it's
doing
so
it,
ridiculous.
They're injecting.
It's just a damn fad, excuse my French, because...
No, it's true.
When I was a kid, I'm from an Italian, Rossi's the most common surname in Italy, and the Italian women tend to be kind of voluptuous and big bottoms, the way they showed love to me as a kid is eat more pasta, and I think, well, I'm about to throw up. I'm just stuffed to the gills. Eat manja, manja, And the women would all complain that they had these big butts, And now they're paying for that,
Oh, my God, it's crazy. I remember when I was a kid, you couldn't have a big bottom. They stuck one of those god-awful things, girdles on young women. And, all women wore girdles to hold you in so it looked like you didn't have a bottom. And heaven forbid you would have a big butt. And now it's the trend. It's what's popular. And that stuff, people are maimed by this stuff. They are killed by this stuff. It is the most hideous substance that was ever brought into being, and it killed the person I love the most in my life. So, and it hasn't made my life any easier, because I've had like 5 reconstructive surgeries, and I finally said forget it, because each time I'd have implants put in, I had problems with them. So, it's hard to tell people to try and find inner happiness with what you have, but it sure costs a lot less physically, emotionally, and spiritually, because it really can create a real tragedy. And Joy was a tragedy.
Well, it's like all great love stories, the Shakespearean ones are kind of tragedies, but there was the beauty of this connection that you two shared, and though the movie, Joy, I think, said it was one of the worst she was ever in. In fact, I love when you tell the story of the two of you going to the Bigfoot premiere together. And I guess it she wouldn't put it up there with some of her greatest work, would she?
No, no, we bailed out in the middle. It was so awful. We couldn't believe it. It's one of those cult classics of worst films. It's so hideous. I mean, I couldn't believe, I had never done a film before when I, you know, was on Bigfoot. And I went into the soundstage. I could not believe it was so cheap. They had these plastic plants that they had rented. It was supposed to be a jungle scene. And it was just, and it doesn't show well on film either. It looks like a bunch of plastic plants. They did shoot in Griffith Park.
The lighting had some issues too. There's a scene where
just a few.
The Bigfoot's fighting with a bear, or some of the Bigfoots are fighting, and it's so dark, you can't tell what's going on. It looks like a couple shadows kind of battling
out.
Right,
it's a stinko, yeah.
But thank God for this film, because you two connected, and I guess, should we let the big secret out of the bag now? I guess it's safe to let the secret out of the bag.
Sure,
that
sure.
You and Joy's relationship, it wasn't just actresses and friends.
No, it was one of those wonderful things that happened in life. The timing was perfect. I came into Joy's life at the right time for her, and it came in for me also. We connected on so many different levels, and a magic happened, and we ended up becoming lovers. Joy had been heterosexual all of her life. She had three husbands, loved men. But at that point in her life, she needed more nurturing, and we fell in love. And it was the most amazing thing that I have ever experienced and will ever experience. I am so grateful.
Was it your first love, Alexis?
Yes, she was my first love.
Now, this is, 1969 when the
relationship
started?
Yes, yeah. I was living at the Studio Club, the home for young women in Hollywood, where a lot of the studio heads had their, Farrah Fawcett lived there at the same time, so did Sally Struthers, some big names.
Wow. Any memory of Farrah or Sally at that time?
Yeah, sure. Farrah was very, very, very quiet, and I remember seeing her most of the time. Because she had such beautiful hair, she always had her hair in those big tin cans rolled up.
Yeah, well, that's a real time.
That's
curling irons. The electric curling irons have eliminated that.
That was the thing.
Beautiful hair, didn't she?
Yeah, she did. She's a very sweet girl, but just very, very quiet.
Well, it's interesting because when we think of the time in Hollywood, and Rock Hudson, we were just watching on classic TV, McMillan and Wife, and, you know, he had such a great, kind of macho persona, and so everyone was shocked. Well, not everyone, of course, there were rumors, but when it came out that Rock Hudson was gay, it was something that he was almost forced to come out with because of the AIDS diagnosis, as well as Liberace. Liberace even sued a British tabloid and won damages because they said he was gay. So it was an era where a same-sex relationship was a career killer. And I mean, to some extent, people are worried about it now. There's some well-known A-list stars, I won't mention by name, that are seen as leading men or romantic leading ladies that are closeted even to this day, but because they think, well, they might not buy me as a romantic heterosexual
and
lead.
It's true, and I knew this, and Joy was just so excited about having someone that she loved, and she... She wasn't as nervous about it as I was. I knew in my heart that if anyone found out, Joy's career would be destroyed. And so we came up with the Sisters Act. Because we both blonde, had the same color eyes, we pulled it off. I became Rachel Lansing. Joy Bishop, she introduced me to Joey Bishop, and he said, your name doesn't fit. You need to be Rachel. So from that point on, I was Joey's younger sister, Rachel.
And you started as Nancy, right, before Joey Bishop
right.
gave you the
that,
Rachel?
That's my, that, yeah, that's my birth name. And it was I worked
fact,
under the name of Nancy Hunter.
You were credited as Nancy in the Bigfoot film.
Yeah, I was, Nancy Hunter, yes.
And what about the Alexis?
The Alexis is my pen name, and I write for the local newspaper, and I enjoy it, and I just wanted to make great changes in my life, and after Joy died, no one knew me as Rachel, so I had to go back to Nancy, and it's a long story, but I love the name Alexis. I seems to fit, and I'm very happy with it.
Yeah.
It's probably confusing to people, but I hope they figure it out.
You know, I'm making a film right now, and it's a modern version, an Elmer Gantry-ish character, and I have a tie to that film because I played Elmer Gantry on stage, and they brought the Oscar from the 1960 film and gave it to me on stage and praised my performance, and now we're doing a contemporary version of that we're shooting that type of character. But I say all that to say I was very disappointed in Burt Lancaster because I was given, like I say, memorabilia from the original film, and I was blessed to be at the lovely Shirley Jones home. I got invited to Shirley Jones home, and she gave me a photograph of her and Burt with the Oscar from that film, and I'm playing the con man preacher in this upcoming film. But all that being said, I was very disappointed in the way that Burt Lancaster treated Joy once again as a sex object in relation to Elmer Gantry.
Yeah, it's very sad. Yeah, it's very sad. Joy was told she had a part in Elmer Gantry. She went to the set, and spoke with Burt Lancaster and said, you know, where's my script, whatever. And he said, oh no, I just want you around. There's no real part for you. But just stick around. Stay in my trailer with me. So she left. But that was not atypical.
I'm asking the obvious dumb question, but so do you think his expectation is we're hiring her to be his mistress or his lover in his dressing room?
Yeah, yeah. Basically, you know, just to have her around, just for amusement.
It's an insult, and it's so disrespectful to her as a actress as well. And it still goes on. I mean, it still goes on in Hollywood. I don't know if it's any better. I mean, maybe there's a little bit more awareness of sexual harassment and that sort of a thing. You know, she was marketed as this straight-laced Mormon, but that was more PR, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. The studios... when she was under contract to the studios, they wanted her to be the sweet girl next door with the great body, you know. So she was born Mormon. Her mother was active in the Mormon Church, and then her mother became Christian Scientist. So that was the end of the being Mormon. But Joy wasn't especially religious. In fact, we went to a few different churches and synagogues just to see. Joy was very spiritual, not so much religious, but spiritual. And the final thing that she loved the most was unity. She loved the unity commercials and offered to do one for them. But she lived a life of sweetness and kindness and love.
Well, you know, she was very kind, even when I read you two going to the Bigfoot premiere, and the film turns out to be a bomb. And yet she was kind and trying to encourage the director, Bob, what was his name, Bob something?
Bob Slatzer.
That's it. Bob Slatzer's ready to jump off a bridge, and she says, who knows, it might become a cult classic, Bob. And she found a way to, you know, encourage him and care about him as a human being.
Yes. Yes. In fact, when we would go places, people would want her autograph. She never turned anyone down. She was always grateful that they appreciated her and loved her. And that's another reason why I I wrote the book. I want people to remember her. I don't want her memory to die. I want people to know who she was.
Well, you've done a fantastic job. You've really, you know, brought her back into our awareness with this book. I mean, I loved her as a kid in the shows, and we love the classic TV and the show she was on, the Beverly Hillbillies and Superman. I still watch all this stuff because
now here in
Los Angeles, on over the air, they got these great stations like MeTV and Antenna TV, and they're showing all the old classic TV shows. And a lot of the stars of those shows come on the show a lot because I do love that stuff. And so we've had on the show everyone from the Bionic Woman, Lindsay Wagner, to Don Wells from Gilligan's Island, to Richard Anderson, who was on all those shows. And literally scores of old stars contact us and love to come on the show. So we like to honor that period of TV. And and she was great on all those old shows. I think she was even Superman's girlfriend, if I remember.
She,
right?
she was actually Mrs. Superman.
Mm-hmm. With George Reeves.
Yes, yes. In fact, a lot of people remember her as Mrs. Superman.
Yeah. Well, we'll be right back in a minute. We're gonna let you all know, listening, to send in questions, and that we have a few minutes left to RichardRossiLive@gmail.com. Send a question, or just call it in to the number on the screen for the show, which is 347-637-2379. So we'll be right back with you, Alexis. Can you hold on for a few more minutes and talk a little longer?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, we'll be right back with Joy Lansing's story and Alexis Hunter.
You know, when it comes to talk shows, my friend Harvey's all ears, especially when it comes to listening to Rich Rossi Live.
Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live. And we have some fans of cult movies that really are saying they're really enjoying the show. Let me see here. This is a message from Jeff that liked the Bigfoot film and thought it was a lot of fun, and wondered about the claim of the director to be married to Marilyn. You talk about Marilyn Monroe. You talk about that in the book, that Bob Slatzer, director of the Bigfoot movie that brought you and Joy together, claim to be married to Marilyn Monroe. He's written a couple books on Marilyn Monroe. He's since deceased. But any opinion, thumbs up, thumbs down? I got the feeling from your book, not to put words in your mouth, that you didn't buy his story, Alexis?
I find it difficult knowing him, because we became friendly with Bob afterwards. And we'd go to dinner occasionally with him. And in knowing him, I would find it very, very difficult to believe. I mean, who knows? Who knows? I can't say yay or nay, but even at Joy's funeral, he had written the book and stated that he was married to Marilyn. And so there were some death threats, supposedly, through the FBI. And so at Joy's funeral, Slater was there, and the FBI was there, and the police were there, and it just became a sideshow because of it. So I truly don't know, but I don't think I can't see what she would have seen in him, but she had some very eclectic taste in men, so she might have. Who knows? She might have.
Yeah, the proof he offers is some photos with her. And it seems like the photos may have been taken on the set of the movie Niagara. So who knows? He may have just dropped by the set and then used those photos to pitch a story, because he conveniently says that he had to go and burn the wedding certificate in Mexico under orders of the studio. So conveniently there's
give
no
me a break.
Documented
Richard,
proof. You know?
Richard, give me a break. And I'm Martha Washington. Yeah, right.
You know, he might have been ahead of his time now with all the fake news that people talk about, putting out fake news.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
seems like
a
pretty
a
fun and harmless guy in some ways.
Yeah. He was fine. He was fine. Not a great director, but he was okay. I mean,
well, you and I love the pictures in the book of you and Joy, and I can see why people bought the ruse of you two being sisters, because you're both lovely blondes, and there was an age difference, so you were the younger sister. She was she about 20 years older than you?
18 years old.
Okay. And her husband, who they were separated at the time, was Stan Todd.
Right.
And Stan was kind of still a, the book paints a picture of him as still being supportive of Joy in certain ways, but certainly not, you know, a functional husband in the true sense of the word. They were more estranged or separated. And so he looked at you two as just good friends and was glad you were taking care of her. He wasn't aware that your relationship had gotten a lot closer than he realized.
No, we kept everything. We were very, very discreet. And we especially after Joy was diagnosed, we brought us even closer together. Stan was a good guy toward the end. He was a really good guy. He helped out. We moved from her apartment on Fountain and La Cienega. It was called Fountain View West. And we were living on the fourth floor, and after she had been diagnosed, we all moved in together into the penthouse in the same building. And Stan was very helpful. He helped with the rent, and because Joy couldn't work, and I was with her all the time, I couldn't work. I was helping to take care of her. And Stan did it. And we were like the trio. We spent most of our time in restaurants. That was our entertainment. And
you mentioned taking care of her, and this to me is so profound on many, many levels, Alexis, because, you know, here's a woman that was objectified, ultimate sex object. And when you all see the pictures of her, you can see that she had a body to die for in more ways than one. But when you think about sex and love and our culture's kind of addictive nature so many times with just using people for their bodies, you know, pornography and that sort of thing, you know, what is true love? You know, true love is, are you going to change that person's diapers when they're old? Are you going to care for them when they have cancer? What happens if they have an accident and they're unable to have sex or their face is disfigured? And the thing that shines through in this book is the fact that you and Stan are caring for this sex symbol as she's, you know, dying of cancer at the end and showing true, you know, godly love and caring for her. In fact, this might be hard for you to read, so I'll read it. This is a beautiful poem after Joy passes and goes to heaven. You wrote these beautiful words: "Dearest God, please protect your beautiful angel. Blow gently on her wings so she may fly high above the pressures and agonies of this world. Allow her ears to hear only beautiful music to silence the ringing of the bells that are calling her too soon. And whisper when she sleeps, tell her how much I care." That is so beautiful.
Oh, thank
wow.
you. Thank you so much, Richard. I adored her. I truly loved her, and I still do. So.
And she passed in 72, was it?
Yeah, in 1972. She was only 43.
Wow.
But, I also don't want your audience to think that the book is a total downer of misery. It isn't. In fact, after... when we were first together, we had all these wonderful adventures.
About meeting Elvis backstage.
Oh yeah, Elvis and all the big stars we met, and the Joy knew, and I didn't, and here I am, Miss Kansas.
She had this trick that I love, where she would slip the note, "Joy Lansing's here." Have the security guard give it to Elvis or James Brown or whoever the star was on stage, and they'd roll out the red carpet, and you two were back there hanging out with Elvis and
James Brown.
Whoever the star was, she was able to give the security guard a note, and you two always got to hang out.
Immediately. People adored her. Other celebrities adored her. And so we had a blast. And then even after she was ill, it was a miracle. The doctors didn't think she would ever leave the hospital because cancer had spread throughout her body. But they started a new chemo, and the beauty, I know a lot of people have problems with chemo, but Joy didn't. She didn't lose her hair. Her hair thinned, but she didn't lose it. And she felt great. And we had a few years of really having a good time, just delighting in being alive. Only toward the very end did she become have a difficult time, but she did great on the chemo, and I'm so grateful to the doctors who gave us that extra time. We were together almost 4 years, but it was almost like a lifetime because we were together 24/7. We were never separated.
You live more in those 4 years than many people live in 40 years.
I know, and I am so blessed, Richard. I'm so blessed to have had that time with her.
The pictures are fantastic, too. Those of you listening, the book is Joy Lansing, A Body to Die For. And you have pictures with her on the set of Bigfoot, the movie talked about. I like these modeling pictures of you when you were about 19. You're so cute.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
You have everything from telegrams in here from the golden age of Hollywood that you two got, and you pulled it off. I'm reading here Rona Barrett's Hollywood. She was the big tabloid Hollywood gossip girl at the time, and she has here a picture of you two, glamour girl Joy Lansing posed with her little sis, you guess which is which, who also hopes to launch a film career. You fooled Rona Barrett. Ha ha, Rona, they got you.
Yeah, she was a sweet lady. So that was good.
Yeah.
That was fun. I made the movie maker.
You guys pulled it off. Well, you know, many people out there listening, for whatever reason, sometimes have had a passionate relationship that they couldn't go above ground about. In your case, you were in a time of Hollywood where you couldn't tell the truth about what was happening with you two. You know, sexuality, they say, is a continuum, according to Kinsey, and it's very interesting because when you look at you two, you're both so beautiful. You don't fit the stereotype, and forgive me if I'm even putting out a stereotype, but, you know, the stereotype people have of women in a same-sex relationship is, you know, these butch women, and, you know, this one is the male, very, very masculine with the crew cut, and the other is pretty and a lipstick lesbian. But you two are absolutely beautiful. You look like two beautiful blonde sisters, and I can see why people fell for it and didn't know what was going on.
Well, thank you so much. It was easy to pull off with her. She was so beautiful. No one would ever suspect Joy. And Joy
was
really...
Well, let me ask you, what is the best way for people to get the book? Do you send them to Amazon, or do you have a website yourself?
Amazon is great. And BarnesandNoble.com. And Bear Manor Media is my publisher. And you can also buy it through them. And I have a page for Facebook for the book. Under that title, Joy Lansing, A Body to Die For. So if anybody out there is on Facebook, say hi. I'd love to talk to you. If anybody wants to talk about Joy and has questions about Joy or questions about the book, please contact me. I love talking about her. I love having people know who she was.
What's the best way to contact you again?
Through my Facebook page.
Okay, Facebook page, and you and I are Facebook friends.
Yeah, we are. It's under the name of the book. I have a page for the book.
Oh, great. So,
yeah, so
instead of your personal page, you want to send them to the book page.
Right, because there's quite a few Alexis Hunters, and I don't know if you'd find me. If you can find me, great.
Okay. To Die For, the what's the Facebook page handle? Let's find it.
It's just under
A Body to Die For. Okay, go to facebook.com/joy, J-O-I, Lansing, dot, A Body to Die For.
Right.
And I'm going to like this page right now myself. I just found it.
Cool.
And,
also on Instagram, I post a lot of her photos on Instagram.
Oh, great.
Under Miss Alex Hunter. And, oh, gosh. I think, and I'm on Twitter also, Ms. Alex Hunter.
Oh, great. And on and you're Ms. Alex Hunter on Facebook. That's your Facebook.
Yes,
handle,
I am.
Facebook.com/ Ms. Alex Hunter. I thought on your page one of the fashion icons, the woman with the glasses that's in her 90s, I think. I saw a picture of her. I think someone posted it on your page. And you got some really cool stuff on your page, pictures of joy. Well, thanks for visiting with us and sharing this story. It's just a great journey, and you had a lot of courage. A girl, you're like Dorothy. You come out of Kansas and you go into a whole new world of Oz.
Whole new
Hollywood
world.
Is
whole
like your colorful world of Oz, and then you know, you and Joy is kind of like your scarecrow or Tin Man or Lion that takes you on this journey down the yellow brick road.
Oh,
for
my
four
God.
Years. I mean, it was,
yes.
You weren't in Kansas anymore, were you?
No, I wasn't. And one other quick thing about the book, Joy, I don't know if it was hormonal or whatever, Joy would have she had a problem with alcohol and sleeping pills, which was another thing that she was able to stop. She with that. So I'm very, very happy about that. But anyone who has dealt with that or dealt with cancer or dealt with any of these things, all these issues are addressed in the book and with love and kindness. So I hope everyone will want to read the book.
Well, I sure loved it, and I'm an avid reader, and it has to be really a great story and well-written to get me, because I have about 30 books sitting here I'm supposed to read for shows and other things, and I just couldn't put it down. So you did a heck of a job.
Thank you so much, Richard. I really appreciate it.
Well, God bless you, Alexis, and I'm glad to meet you and share your story, and all of you get a hold of this book. And thanks for being with us today.
Well, thank you so much, and God bless you.
God bless you, Alexis. And I want to share with all of you that we have an exciting show coming up as well, a week from today, October 11th, same bat time, same bat channel, 11 a.m. I've had a fascination with cults for a long time. I have studied cults in college. I studied with a German professor who's one of the experts in cults. And I've talked on here about some of the Christian cults, Christian-based cults. Next week we have an Eastern religion yoga type of cult. It's featured on CNN and a film at Sundance. The film is Holy Hell, and the director, Will Allen, and his friend, Chris Johnston, who were both in this cult, in which a guru promised enlightenment he would recruit through yoga classes. He was a sexual predator on men in the group, and it became a very toxic group, and Will and Chris escaped, and Will had a lot of footage that he shot behind the scenes of the cult, and it's an incredible story on recovery and how after being in this group for about 20 years, these two guys are moving forward and doing all kind of cool things. The film got to Sundance. That'll be next week. Buddha, I think it's called Buddha Field, is the name of the cult. And they're going to talk about how they escaped Buddha Field. Wow. Charismatic guru had sway over their lives for 22 years and they got out. Very interesting show, and we'll be sharing that with you next week. Thanks again for tuning in to Richard Rossi Live. Go with God and be blessed.